All right, Sal, you were there. Tre'Davious White leaves practice injured today. What did it look like?
All right, so the practice was inside the stadium today, and we were, as a media group, basically in the one end of the stadium. It was the tunnel end, but you know, in the kind of the corner area, and we were all watching. And Tre'White, after an 11-on-11 play, we could see something, like the media saw something. We didn't see it was like kind of not, he wasn't near the play. You're not following the ball. If you're following the ball, you're not seeing him. It was kind of through the players, right? So there was a couple of media members said, hey, what's that over there? It looks like someone's hurt. And we all looked over and it was Tre'White and he was like hopping on one foot. Now you're like, oh crap, right? You know, because of the injury history there. So we knew that was the case. So watching him, didn't see exactly what happened. Didn't see if he got stepped on or if it was non-contact, just could not tell, to be honest with you. So we see him hopping a little bit, and then we see Mitch Trubisky basically go over to him and walk him over to the sidelines. And as he's doing that, he's still hopping on one foot. Then he goes over, and he's with trainers basically. They walk over to the wall area, and Trey looked like he was upset. He was like kind of hitting the wall like he was upset, talking with trainers, standing on both feet at that point, talking with trainers. I would say he's there for about maybe 2-3 minutes. It probably seemed like longer. That was probably what it is. And then eventually he started walking on his own with a trainer trailing him, walked across the field, like the end zone area, walked all the way up the tunnel into the game day locker room, which is on the back of the tunnel there, not close to the field. It's on the other side. Walked into the locker room there, and we didn't see him for a little while. And then a few minutes later, took a look, and he was back. He had walked down, and I didn't actually see him physically walk down, but clearly he did. He walked down back towards the field and stood there and watched a little bit of practice and then got into a cart sitting in the front seat, and then they drove off through the tunnel back towards wherever they went.
Well, we've talked about him a lot. A lot's riding on him, it seems, with the Hairston injury and the Bills having some uncertainty, maybe to put it mildly, at that position. And you've liked how he's looked, I think.
Yeah, I've liked it, except for some times. I think it's been inconsistent. I liked how he looked maybe in a couple of practices. I haven't liked how he looked in a couple of practices. I didn't think he was particularly strong in the Bears joint practice, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think he's had some really good days. One day he was the best player on the field at training camp, and I think a couple other days he's not been as good. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like, but there's also some concerns. That being said, he's clearly a starting cornerback. I mean, that's what he is right now. He is the starting cornerback opposite Christian Benford. Now, on a related note, Christian Benford also ended his practice early, and he didn't go back out for team reps. And I don't know if he walked all the way, like, out of the field, but he went off the field, off the practice field. And we did talk to him after practice, and he said he was fine. He just needed some rest, but that's okay. But if anybody saw that report out there, that's, you know, what happened with Christian Benford. But look, man, I mean, you know, Tre'Davious White is the starting cornerback, and until Max Harrison's ready, that's going to be what it is. And if he's out for any significant time, then it really brings into question what you have. And to me, I mean, the next guy up to me would be Dane Jackson. Now, I know that doesn't sit well with a lot of fans. The reason why I say that is I would think the Bills would want to lean on a little more experience on the outside and a guy that has started for them before. Could you put Jamarcus Ingram in there? Sure. But Jamarcus Ingram plays so many positions for them. He's so valuable. I don't think you would pigeonhole him just to start on the outside. I think you would have Dane Jackson in order to have Jamarcus Ingram available to do other things. That's why I say I think Dane Jackson would be the next man up.
Mm-hmm. The obvious name from the outside here, Sal, would be Rasul Douglas. A caller asked about him a short time ago. And my thought on him is just how they went to Tre'White early in the offseason in the first place. But yeah, it might have been the case that Douglas was looking for more than Tre'White would have gotten here in a deal somewhere else in free agency. Now it's August 21st, and he doesn't have it. I wonder, you know, it's not just White, but maybe even Benford, dare I say it, depth pieces too, just injuries, and of course Hairston. He would be the name on the tip of your tongue, but is there a reason you might think where the Bills like just would never call him, or is there someone else? Like, what do you think of Douglas as a? I mean, it's a red flag if he signs, right? Because then they're probably concerned about where they're headed with their injuries.
Yeah, well, would I say never? No, I think that, you know, you never say never. I mean, if they're in a spot where they need somebody, I think the first thing you do is get somebody who knows the system. You don't have to onboard them as quickly, right? I mean, you go get somebody who you can plug and play and say, hey, you know what our calls are. You've played with this group before. And, you know, Rasul did that for a year and a half. I'd also say, I think I share that I know a lot of fans saying that today, but I think a lot of those same fans would say and go back and look that he wasn't as good last year, right? Yeah. There were a lot of times where you felt he just wasn't giving you what he did the year before that when they got him in a trade. So what does he have left? What is he right now? And the fact that he hasn't signed anywhere, we don't know what that means. Could that be what you just said, Mike, which is he's just asking for too much money and a team just like, I don't want to do that? Or has he gone and he's met with teams and like, not really what we want right now because he's not really what we thought he was or could be or, you know, still is, those kind of, that kind of thing. So you never know. I mean, but he's still out there as a free agent, and that sometimes should tell you something. So, but would I say never? Of course not. I think if there's something significant, I think a guy like that would be, I mean, what are your other options and alternatives? You're not getting a draft pick at this point, obviously. I think you just have to wait for Max Harrison then to be ready and hope that he can play. I do want to add, though, a couple things about Tre'Davious White, because I think that this is just context that needs to be out there after tweeting and reporting today and reading a lot of people. Number one, I've seen a lot of reports, even people saying, attributing to me or other reporters there, saying he was carted off the field. I think that's not correct when you think of the way people are carted off a field. Tre'Davious White did ultimately leave the field while sitting in a cart. He walked all the way up the stadium tunnel into the locker room. Then he walked back down the stadium tunnel to where the cart was. It also is a long walk. And if he's going to go outside the stadium, which obviously he did after that. And at that point, I think you have to take into context that they're not going to have him, you know, basically walking and doing that. If he's got to go outside the stadium and over to the other locker room and the training facility, they're going to bring a cart for him. So I want that, number one. Number two, Mike, it is notable to me. And I don't know what, I don't have to say this means something or doesn't mean something, but it is notable to me that the head athletic trainer, Nate Bresky, wasn't walking with him up the tunnel. It was a trainer. There was someone there. But I just noted that it wasn't the head athletic trainer, right? Doesn't have to mean anything. I'm just saying, in my experience, a lot of times, like, it will be him, you know, in those situations where there's something
scared,
concerning, right?
Right.
So,
yeah,
I like I said, I don't want to necessarily have to read anything into that, but I do want to make note of it.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off today. Just to put a bow on this regarding White, so tomorrow is a travel day. Is there any reason to think there will be an update? Of course, somebody could just break in at some point and, like, this is what he's got. But is there anything official tomorrow that could tell us the news?
No, there's no media availability tomorrow, so we will not hear anything. The only way we would know, I think, before Saturday. Now, Saturday night's a long way away, right? We got, you know, 48 hours here plus before they play a game. I guess what I'm waiting for is, does he show up in Tampa in the stadium? And is he with his teammates? Is he in uniform? Is he on the sidelines? I think that's the next thing to see. It is very possible that he doesn't make the trip, but it doesn't have to mean that it's also a majorly serious injury. I'll give you an example. Last week, Cam Lewis didn't make the trip with the Bills. Cam Lewis was practicing this week. So you just never know how they handle these things.
Mm-hmm, right. So there was also a fight today, and it sounded like a pretty good one.
Yeah, I guess good relative to, like, a lot of bodies and a lot of people in there, right? I mean, it's football players pushing and shoving. Basically what happened was Taylor Rapp kind of gave Elijah Moore a shot, and Elijah Moore, like, pushed, threw the ball back at him, tossed it back at him, whatever. That exchanged some words, and a whole bunch of guys just started gathering around. Next thing you know, people are pushing and shoving. They're getting hands on each other. And then guys were on the ground. And I looked down, and A.J. Epenesa's on the ground, but I don't know if he was pushed on the ground. He fell. Deion Dawkins pulls him out of there. He gets up. They start talking to each other. They kind of sort of put hands on each other. They weren't really fisticuffs or anything. And there was a lot of words exchanged between a lot of people. That was after a little while before that. It looked like to me DeMar Hamlin had hit I think it might have been Ray Davis coming through the hole or somebody. Like, there was a maybe it was Elijah Moore. My apologies. But he did hit somebody, like, give him a shot. And even Josh Allen came in and said something when everybody kind of gathered in. So it was chippy today. And Sean McDermott said before practice, he was going to have the ones practice today and go ones against ones, and they were going to have to get some, I think he said, like, conditioning in, or, you know, making sure that kind of thing. And he said, they're not going to like me much for it. So it could have just been, seriously, like, people are just on edge because they're not happy that that has to happen. But I think Sean's plan was, let's do this so these guys don't have to play tomorrow, Saturday.
Do you have – that's interesting. Do you have a take on Rapp? This, wasn't it Kincaid that went out yesterday from a hit by Taylor Rapp? And then I'm not sure if I'm right here, but I read somewhere that he might have been kicked out of practice for this one. So is he crossing lines as you see it?
Yeah, I did not see him get kicked out, but one of my colleagues and a couple of my colleagues did say that, so I'll trust that I didn't see that happen, but I was focused on what was happening. So if that was the case, yes, they did report that. My take is that, you know, you have to know the situation and the moment in the practice, and I love the fact that he goes hard. I love the fact that he wants to practice and be there, but, you know, you have to understand, you know, what the situation is. I will tell you, yesterday against Dalton Kincaid, I mean, Taylor Rapp went up to make a play on the ball. So did Dalton Kincaid. And I think they're just going hard. And, you know, just because of the way Dalton's body was kind of, you know, angled, that it might have happened and been more severe than it should have been. You know, it's always tough. I try to really understand, being around football my whole life, Mike, that these are football players who are playing football. And yes, as much as you're not supposed to hit or take to the ground, you're also supposed to try to make a play, right? And sometimes those things happen. But I do think there's times where, and Taylor Rapp specifically has been kind of in the middle of this a little bit, I do think there's times where you have to know when to kind of let up and not let that be a part of your game in that situation.
We've talked about a lot this week, even some uncertainty at safety beyond Rapp with Bishop, mm-hmm. and what their options are. How good a player is Rapp for you?
Well, good is relative, I guess. I think he's super important for the Buffalo Bills. You know, that position is really important for what they need for guys, and he kind of does everything for them. I don't know if you saw my tweet yesterday. I don't think we talked about it specifically, but yesterday I asked Bobby Babich about the evolution of safety, and it used to be free and strong, and now there's just two safeties, and Bobby loved it, and he's like, yeah, I love talking about this stuff. And he talked about how he came from the 46 defense, 46 single it was called, and that was Doug Plank's jersey number, right, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Taylor Rapp is kind of the new age kind of safety that Bobby Babich is referring to, which is he can play deep center field, but he can come up in the box. And this is what we're talking about, right? He's a physical guy. But you need guys who can do everything there. And that's what the new wave, new age type of safety is. That's what they're thinking Cole Bishop can be. You know, no longer really is, well, you just have a guy who's a thumper. You know, that was back in the day. You just have a guy who's center field. I think it's more important for the Bills and their defense, by the way he talked, have guys who can really play center field, because he said playing in space is really important. But the other reason why Taylor Rapp is important, and I'll go back to what Sean McDermott said back at the owners' meetings, I believe it was, Combine maybe, I think owners' meetings. He said Taylor Rapp basically does what Terrell Bernard does for them, for the secondary. He sets their defense. He's a super important piece for them, and we all know how, you know, that's that is something they really rely on there. So good, yeah, I think he's made some plays, no doubt. Is he, you know, an elite safety in this league? No. He had some interceptions. I think that he's progressed, like, from where he was when he first signed. He was behind Micah and Jordan. But I think he's important for what they do.
Who's your all-time favorite safety?
All-time favorite safety.
Ronnie Lott is the first name I think of. I'm not sure I couldn't come up with somebody that I liked more, but, you know, not a Bill.
I might say that. I might go to Steve Atwater.
All right. Atwater, same mold.
Yeah, Atwater was just, he was a thumper, but he could do a lot of things too. I mean, you know, how can you not love Kelso and Smith? Now that is the true, you want to talk about old school style of safeties and how teams played it. That is a true strong and free, right? That's Leonard Smith.
No doubt.
And Mark Kelso. And I told a story before, and I don't know if I've told it to you, but I remember being in high school and go to a game and the Bills got beat on a couple post patterns. I go back to Cleve Hill the next day, and I'm at football practice, and I say to my old defensive coordinator, athletic director, Carl Curris, who founded the Trench Trophy, I said, Coach, you know, why do the Bills get beat on these post patterns, right? They have these really good safeties. And he said, because Leonard Smith is too undisciplined to stay in his zone. He wants to hit everybody, and Mark Kelso is not fast enough to cover for him. That's what he said. Yep. It was great. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. I understand now.
Sounds right to me. Basically, I could buy that explanation. We talked yesterday about Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and their importance to the Bills in their years, McDermott's history. McDermott also had Brian Dawkins for 10 years when he was on the Philadelphia staff. There's an all-time great, too.
No doubt, yeah. I mean, you talk about some of these guys that McDermott has had, and that's one of them. You know, McDermott talks about Brian Dawkins a lot. Like, he refers to him as one of these guys, like talking about the safety play that they've had, you know, over the years and where he's been at Philadelphia and Carolina. So, you know, he's done a really good job of developing safeties. And he's also had the opportunity to work with really talented safeties, and it's kind of been the perfect match. You know, and right now it's a bit of a concern. I like what he said about Cole Bishop today, though, that, you know, he likes where Cole Bishop's going right now. He likes the progression. He used the word callous again. You have to build up the callous. You have to, you know, failure's the best teacher, and I think this is Bobby yesterday. Failure's the best teacher, and, you know, making sure that, you know, going through these tough times is really important for a lot of these guys. So, yeah, I like what I'm hearing from them, but, you know, now you have to go put it into play and see him do it.
Just a couple of minutes left with Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline. How about Saturday night? We found out that Josh Allen will not play in this game. No surprise, really. Do you expect any of the starters to play? I mean, thinking about, again, Trey White, whether he makes the trip, you sort of read into that a little bit, what it could mean. Would you have thought he would have been on the field if he were healthy, though?
No, I don't. Sean even said today, he at that, like, when he met with us this morning, he said at this time he didn't anticipate most of the ones, the starters playing, but he said everybody's a case-by-case basis. We asked him about Curtis Samuel, for example, because he hasn't had that time. And he used, this is a good example, right, of how you're going to have to think about this. He said, well, you know, Curtis was missing this time, and, you know, you might think that he would play, but he actually really liked what he likes what he's done over the last couple of days since he's been back. You know, is that a guy that you need now to see on the field, or has he done enough over the last few days to say he doesn't need to be on the field and you have two more weeks to get him ready here? So I think that's a good example right there. I do think Cole Bishop will play, though. I think you have to have him back on the field to get more of those reps to, I'll use Sean's word again, callous, you know, to go through those things again, to understand. And I would expect, though, Mike, honestly, that I think Saturday night probably looks a lot like, personnel-wise, it did last Sunday night.
Well, maybe the Bucks will cooperate, unlike the Bears. And I would expect this, actually. The Bills are favored in the game, so somebody else is expecting it, too, that they're not going to. We know we're not going to see most of Tampa's, if not all of Tampa's, top guys. Got to be fun for you. Looking forward to Tampa.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, go down there tomorrow night and then have all day Saturday, and I have some friends down there and been trying to coordinate. My buddy, who you've had on the air before, TJ Reeves, the sideline reporter for the Buccaneers, trying to get together with him maybe if we can. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you look forward to these warmer weather trips when they're a little bit later in the year. Tampa at this time of year is going to be pretty hot, so, but that's okay. Not complaining at all, but yeah, for sure. I have some friends down there. I got a friend who's a really, really big Bills fan, and him and his family, and they're driving up maybe about an hour from where they live down a little south of Sarasota, and, you know, he calls me and says, hey, you want to get together for lunch with my mom and dad? They haven't seen you in a while. So that kind of thing is pretty cool, you know?
I talked to John Ledyard earlier, and was just looking up the Buccaneers. It didn't hit me right away that they have won that division 4 years in a row, going back to back to Brady, and not always with great records. 1 year they were 8-9 and won it, but yeah, they're on a 4-year NFC South title streak.
You know, it's funny too, they come here this year, and it's always weird that it's weird for me this year that the Bills are playing them in the preseason and playing them in the regular season. I did ask Mike North about that when the schedule came out. Hey, you know, how does that happen? He said they really, the league does it, it's not the teams, and it's the third preseason game, so you're not probably expecting the starters, and because they don't play until later in the year, but I still think it's kind of weird that happened. Then I was thinking today, Mike, you know this, because I know you know this, but the Buccaneers were the only team that had never visited Highmark Stadium, currently Highmark Stadium, for many years. And then they did, what, 09 maybe? Dante Whitner, right, has a nice play there, and T.O. And then since then, though, now the last few years, this will be the third time in the last several years they've been here. This is the regular season, I mean, when they play.
Yes. 09, 17, and 23. The 23 game, the Thursday night game, it was the so-called 17th game, the extra, you know, both first-place teams. That game that, what, the game ended on a failed Hail Mary?
Yes, yeah, Tampa. I remember that. It fell harmlessly to the earth, but, man, if someone turns around, it might not have fallen harmlessly to the earth. I saw Chris Godwin's going to start returning for them very soon, and they're hoping he's ready for October. The Bills play them in November, so you know that's something to monitor there. And that would be three times. This will be the third time in 9 years then that Tampa comes to Buffalo, which is kind of odd for an NFC team.
Right, that extra game does give you that.
Yep.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Sal. Enjoy the trip down.
All right, thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by Your Place to Buy a Case, New York's only outlet liquor. What's your outlet? In the 80s, I mean, I don't need to do a whole thing on this. Who even cares? It's so long ago. But you finished last five-team divisions. There were 5 and 4. If you finished last in a five-team division, you would play the other fifth-place team from your conference home and away. So the Bills and Chiefs had at least 1 year of that, I think 86. And then you'd play the fifth-place team or teams from the other conference, and that was the Bucs. So a couple of those games, the Bills and the Bucs in the 80s, at least one would have been that, just fifth-place team versus another. Because you get left out of, in those years, you'd get left out of the division matchups that we get every year now in the NFL. Every division is four teams. So as a rule, you know, this year it's the NFC South. The Bills play everybody. And then that extra game is the Philadelphia game, two first-place teams matching up way down the road after Christmas. 803-0550 is the number. I don't think you'll have a thought on that necessarily, but Trey White going down to some extent at practice today. We'll see what we find out here in the next while. May not be until, like Sal even said, Saturday night before we get any kind of word on that. But that stuff does often get out. So we have that to talk about and more, and we will continue after the update. This is Mike Shope on WGR. September, the next show we'll do together, Ross will be on. It'll be you know, week one of the NFL season. Right, so close. 803-0550 is the number. Just talking to Sal about the Buccaneers a little bit. They're the Bills' third and final preseason opponent coming up on Saturday night. And Sal brought up some of the history with the Bucs. You got to think that overtime game that the Bills lost in Tampa was really a great game. That was a classic. The big Fournette run, wasn't it? Or was it someone else? Was it Fournette who ended that game with the long? No, it wasn't. It was Perryman. Fournette had a long one to start the scoring in that game, and it was Brady to Breshad Perryman in overtime for the Bucs that day. Not a lot of big games over the years between these two teams, but that was probably, maybe easily, the best. The Bills are 1.5-point favorites in their opener against the Ravens, and the Bucs are the same 1.5-point favorites in their week one game at Atlanta. Interesting that they'd be favored there. What do you want to do with that? Tampa Bay -1.5 at Atlanta. It might be the highest total of the opening week. No, it's not. 47.5. Wow, Baltimore Buffalo is 51.5. I did not realize that. That's a pretty high number. There's a 49.5 Detroit and Green Bay. And those are the top two. Steelers, Jets, 38.5. That's the range. 51.5 Ravens, Bills. Bills by 1.5, so 26.5 to 25. That's right at what the playoff game was. Basically, the market for this one, week one, is basically identical to what the playoff game was, right at it. Survivor is coming. Oh boy. I mean, that's, again, referring to the next time Bulldog and I are in here together. There'll be picks, there'll be Survivor, there'll be fantasy lineups. Not just drafts anymore, but lineups. In fact, I think that night is our draft with Paul Hamilton. It might be that night. Very exciting times. Week one Survivor. You know the drill here. You're picking one, let's just make it winner as opposed to loser, but they have those two, loser pools. You're picking one winner each week, no spread. And here are your top candidates for week one, because you know you want to know this. You want to be thinking about this right now. It would be Denver -7.5 at home against Tennessee. Philadelphia in the Thursday night opener -7 against Dallas. Washington is a 6-point favorite against the Giants. Arizona is a 6-point favorite at the Saints. Saints getting no respect. Doesn't surprise me. And so those are your top four candidates. spreads, and that's not even, those aren't even that high. Cincinnati, week one is always precarious because nobody knows anything yet. As opposed to the other weeks where we're all very capable of predicting NFL games. Cincinnati at Cleveland is -5.5. Those are your top five favorites in week one. I think because 7.5 is the smallest number there, nobody's going to be really chalky. Like, there isn't one. If there were one 14-point New Orleans at Kansas City or something like that in week one, where that would probably be a double-digit spread, that's a survivor pick I think you want to avoid. Because too many people in your league will pick the Chiefs in that hypothetical. So you want to avoid that. I love survivor pools, but I almost never am in one because I don't want to play against people that have like five entries or, you know, people who are working together, which is, I mean, almost impossible to prevent. But when you have that, you know, you sort of build a little consortium within the pool and you've got two or even more than two people sort of making sure they don't pick the same teams, kind of working as a team. And I just would not want to try to, I do not want to try to beat that, you know, and win survivor pools as a solo artist. And in some of these, you do get the right to, you know, have numerous teams and you can just do the same thing on your own. Just pick, I got five games here, 5.5 and up. I have five entries. I'll just pick all five or something like that. I mean, it's what you want. It's what you do to win, I guess. But that's why, unless I can convince myself to pour money into one of these things and have a lot of entries myself, just doesn't feel right to me, then I tend to avoid it. I do play in Joe Ostrowski's, that I will tell you. That's a bigger one, and I guess the allure of a possible huge payout is enough. So you've got, let's do some more here. Those are the five. Who's my pick going to be of those five? Philadelphia -7, doubt it. Definitely not Washington. I'm not going to give six with Washington against the Giants. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying too hard there. Not comfortable with Washington off of that one amazing, unforeseen year as, I mean, it's not that big a spread, but as like a safe bet as a favorite going into 2025. I'm not comfortable there. We'll see what happens with Terry McLaurin, but I'm not feeling that confident in Washington. And the Giants, the one thing people keep saying about, well, they keep saying a lot of things about the Giants, and many of them are mean. But one thing you do hear about them, it used to be that the Jets got this. I'm sure I said it a lot 2-3 years ago with the Jets. Oh, but there's a lot of talent. The Jets had the offensive and defensive rookies of the year on their roster, and they had Breece Hall, who might have won had he not gotten hurt, right? Was it Garrett Wilson and then Sauce Gardner? So the Jets got that compliment. The Giants get that compliment now, especially on defense. How, like when they came to play the Bills, Abdul Carter and three or four other guys, like the Giants have playmakers on defense and maybe could be, their schedule is brutal, but otherwise maybe could be an interesting fantasy defense pick. I mean, probably not being picked hardly ever. And the schedule is part of that. You don't want to, in my opinion, a lot of people do it this way with defenses. You want to, you know, maybe pick a different one each week, streaming, they call it. And so you're not really thinking so much about the whole season. You're looking at week one. Arizona is a team that gets drafted in fantasy for defense because they play the Saints in week one. That's, we had that one, 6-42. So 24-18, 18 implied total for their opponent. You might like Arizona as a fantasy option. So anyway, the Giants have that. I wonder if offensively with Malik Nabers, running game is the running game, is Wilson competent enough? Is there enough left where he can keep them in games and even beat people? And I don't know. Like, again, they have it really tough. It's almost cruel because the Giants have been so bad. And now you've got, you know, Dable and maybe Joe Shane are up against it this year. But, I mean, listen to this. At Washington, at Dallas, Kansas City, Chargers, Saints. Okay, there's a game where they might be favored. Eagles at Denver. Eagles again. San Francisco, who I think probably will be good. Bounce back year. Super easy schedule. Cake schedule. At the Bears, Green Bay, at Detroit. I mean, this is 12 games in, and the Giants have one game where they look like even or better than their opponent. You could say the Bears, I guess, but I wouldn't. You've got at New England after that, Washington again, Minnesota, at Vegas, and then Dallas. I mean, that is a brutal schedule for a team that's been so bad. Where's my last place schedule benefit? The Giants are wondering. So, Survivor, let me give you, I'll get to an answer. I'm trying to make it on the fly here. Don't feel like I want to go Philadelphia. Definitely want to avoid Washington. Cincinnati at Cleveland, maybe. Arizona at New Orleans, maybe. And then the fifth one was Tennessee, Denver. Those all make a lot more sense to me. The Bengals, everybody kind of knows about how they've had slow starts. And I feel like that's probably baked into that spread. So maybe the Bengals. And then also the Cardinals, who are the Cardinals to give six on the road in week one, but a glaring siren about how bad the market thinks the Saints will be. This is Mike Shope. I'll be right back. Thanks for listening to WGR.
By Brayton Wilson. Mike will be back in just a little bit. And John Ledyard will be joining the show at 4 o'clock. Sal Capaccio at 5 to recap an interesting Bills practice earlier today. Noticing a little bit in the chat, there's some UB chatter as they take on Minnesota to open their season. On the 28th, if I'm correct on that, Zach?
That is next Thursday.
Next Thursday. Gotta love that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually genuinely love that. I hope that UB is able to put up a fun challenge and maybe even try to take that game outright.
Yeah,
and make a statement.
8 p.m. at Minnesota. Minnesota 16.5-point favorites, which it's a Big Ten school, and they're not, you know, Rutgers. They're a pretty good Big Ten school. Darius Taylor's a good running back for them. He's been there, I think, 3 years now?
Yep.
I think 3 years. And their head coach, whose name, P.J. Fleck.
Yes, P.J. Fleck.
He used to be at Western Michigan, did really good there, ends up going to one of the big New Year's Day Bowls, then left them, and he's done really, really well in Minnesota as well.
A solid job in a stacked conference, honestly.
Yeah. Fair. I mean, that's the thing.
The Big Ten's got nuts.
When you go to the Big Ten, it's kind of like if you're not Michigan, Ohio State, or Penn State, like just happy to be there.
Not me, the Purdue supporter.
Well, now basketball's different. Basketball's different, but football, if you're not those three and really Ohio State and Michigan,
yep.
Just be happy to be there.
As the Purdue supporter, yeah, I cheer for the dog. Doormat. Wow.
Doormat, yeah.
Yeah.
You're the Vanderbilt
of
the Big Ten.
What the heck am I doing here?
Vanderbilt of the Big Ten. It's all right. It's okay.
But no, back to UB, though. It is a promising-looking season for them. I did see, what was it, the predictions there from...
Yeah, it's NCAA Nation, Football okay. Nation. Got a lot of followers, and I think he's just doing predictions for, like, every conference.
Right.
And in his, he has UB going 11-1, 7-1 in the conference and beating Toledo for the MAC championship.
That would mean they beat Minnesota.
Yeah, that scenario, they would beat Minnesota. They've got one of the top 100 college players, courtesy
Murdoch,
of ESPN,
yeah.
Linebacker Red Murdoch, comes in at number 90. Taquan Roberson is their quarterback. He's a little bit older. I think he's 24 or 25.
Yep.
But he's used the transfer portal a lot, going to different programs, start a little bit at UConn. Last year was at Kansas State, but they're bringing in a lot of experience there. But they've got so much talent. If you played with them in the video game, you kind of know what it is. But they've got guys like Nick McMillan, who's a local kid. He was hurt last year. He's coming in.
Right.
Victor Snow is an all-conference player. He's really good, especially in the slot. LJ Henderson is kind of like the next iteration of the UB running back model, which is they're going to be incredibly good. May not be NFL players, but they're going to be 1,500, 1,600-yard rushers every year. They're a really good team, kind of.
They're as quickly as they could be.
I mean, they win 9 games last year, the Bahama Bowl against Liberty, and now this year, I think it's the last time I checked BetMGM, Toledo and Ohio are just ahead of them in terms of favorites to win the MAC, but UB is third or second in every sports book in terms of MAC championships. It should be a really fun year. I'm very excited for UB, especially locally. I went to my first game in years. I used to have season tickets as a kid. I went for my first time in, I think, almost 10 years last year, had a ball for homecoming.
Yeah, great. And they managed to get themselves out of the little hole there. Like, they had Lance Leipold. Leipold does end up leaving. Maurice Linguist, they do get a bowl win out of him in one of the 3 seasons, but
great recruiter, but it not great on the field stuff.
Yeah, they move on after a 3-9 season with Linguist that now Pete Lembo comes in, casually 9-4, Bahama Bowl, and now looking like one of the popular picks to take the MAC.
Be good. It's funny, too. I mean, even
catch
during
a game if you can, honestly.
During the Lance Leipold era, they had a lot of talent, double-digit win seasons. They never could win a MAC championship. They went twice, I believe, but still their only MAC title, still 2008, where they weren't even a particularly good team. They just had a few big wins and a huge upset win against, at the time, a ranked Ball State team.
We'll move on. Talk a little bit with John Ledyard coming up as the Bills face the Bucks on Saturday. Shulpin the Bulldog, Derek Kramer here with you. Zach Jones over there producing. This is WGR.